Hello, this is Serena. I will be reading from Cynthia Ozick's Heir to the Glimmering World, pages 207 through 210. It was Frau Mittwisser who finally explained about the Karaites. He found her on the threadbare sofa in the dimly lit sitting room. She was looking into a silver-framed mirror, something else they hadn't left behind, studying herself in the half-dark. He understood that they fretted about the electric bill. They ate boiled rice because it was cheap. They wore clothes out of season. The soles of their shoes had thinned. When he came near, she set down the silver frame on the scarred little table next to her. It wasn't a mirror at all. A hand-tinted old photograph. A small woman. A large plant. He knew she disliked him. She had disliked him from the start. Was it that he was nothing like her idea of a proper tutor? Deferential in suit and tie, deferential especially to his young charges. Surely they were of a station superior to his own. His station, she could not fathom it. He had no station, no standing, no place. He had been sent to them out of nowhere, like the sunken mattresses and the worn tables. He seemed a sort of clown. He cavorted with her sons. He turned them into panting dervishes. Their shouts rang out all day. She felt detached from her own children. She could hardly recognize them. She had noticed him in the hotel, in what they called the breakfast parlor. It wasn't very impressive, that hotel. She had known grander hotels at home, so grand that they had caused her to shake and walk with her hand on her chest to hide her fright. The new hotel, the one they had been sent to, was very plain. The breakfast parlor had no servants. One was expected to serve oneself from a bureau, like a waitress in a public cafe. From the corner of her eye, she saw him rooted beside her, shining all over, sweat trickling down his forearms, his face mottled with heat, as if he had been heaving a sledgehammer. He took a step away. Now he was behind her. She poured some berries into a dish. He was fearfully close, just behind her. She could smell the mammal heat of his armpits. There was danger everywhere. What did he intend? She began to shake. The berries shot out of the bowl. It was a mistake, but still she begged Rudi to prevail on the board to get them out of the hotel. In this place there were many mistakes. Karasmites are not Karaites. Her poor Rudi. They would leave this place as soon as there was money, he said. They would go to New York. It was of course useful to his work to be near a great library. But they had no money. There would never be money. They were thrown out. Karasmites are not Karaites. She could not recognize her own children. Danger everywhere. Oh, if her mother could know how they had all been brought low. Her mother, 10 years dead, the tinted face in the silver frame, saved by a tremulous lie. It's nothing but worthless plate. Nicht Silber, sondern nur eine dünne Silberauflage, völlig wertlos. He had given her a fright. She did not trust him. He was teaching her son strange things. He was asking her strange questions. Rudi's work, Rudi's people. Rudi's people were runaways. Why did he wish to pursue them? Why did he come to her? Why did he not go to Rudi? But Rudi would deny him. Rudi was cautious. He was wary. He guarded his people. They were the same to him as his children. And also, how strict he was, how arrogant. To seize Rudi's people, one must first penetrate their languages, their writings, their beliefs, their history, their exclusions. They abjured all that was not essence. They denounced every abuse of essence, every addition, every embellishment. What has fallen from the hand of God must remain precisely as it was received. What is first is eternal. To add is to undermine. Rudi's people, she told him in her thwarted English. She, her quick brain and tongue hobbled by unnatural, unwanted impositions. Rudi's people, she said, care for nothing but God's own word and will. There is no God. He didn't believe in God. God was nothing to him. His mother, long ago, had murmured to him about the baby Jesus, and his nanny had spoken sternly of the cross and the resurrection as if they were no different from the times tables and had to be learned by heart. Among the scores of presents heaped at his bedroom door each morning, there was sometimes a pillow embroidered with a religious picture, mostly clouds and cherubs with fat dimpled elbows and tiny wings surrounding a bearded saint wearing a halo. The halo was like the golden rings on his mother's new teacups. He was indifferent to cherubs and saints. They weren't toys, and the only toy that mattered. It was more than a toy. It had a real roof and windows you could peer into, and a door that opened and shut was the one that disappeared, the one that was taken away. The one that was an unconscionable distraction, his father grumbled, from the business at hand. Her tongue was hobbled, but she knew her Rudi, she knew his people, and it was rare that anyone came to her to tell who they were. Rudi's people are perfectly obscure, she said in her hobbled voice, making do with fragments of meaning pressed by him into eruptions of meaning. and except for Rudy, they are of interest only to a handful of others, three or four in all the world. There are also the enemies of Rudy's people, who become Rudy's own enemies, even if Rudy's people are merely specks on the face of the earth, hidden lost particles incapable of revivification. So who should fear them? And who should desire them? They are no more substantial than fireflies. Rudy's enemies, particles, and fireflies. She was roaming now, ruminating foreignly, slipping away from what is first is eternal, to add is to undermine. How it burned in him! They denounce every abuse of essence. He fell to his knees before the battered table that held the silver frame. What was he doing? He grasped her two wrists. She was shaking. He was making her shake. He was threatening her. What was he doing? A tutor? No! What hideous creature had Rudy let in? His hideous eyes behind their lenses, the yellow light of the lamp, the yellow glint spiking his lenses. What was he doing? Would he harm her? Would he harm her sons, her little daughter? She could not see into his mind, but he saw. It was clarified. It lay before him, there in the thorny nettles of her half-choked thoughts, the pocked fragments of her telling, the monstrous burning. He released her wrists. He kissed them. He was frightening her. He recognized how he frightened her. But it couldn't be helped. It was monstrous, a conflagration. What is first is eternal, to add is to undermine. "Verrückt!" she cried. Somewhere a door opened. Mitwisser returning from his afternoon's lectures, the wool vest, the felt hat with its ribbon band, the cheap new briefcase. "Elsa," Mitwisser said. He turned to his son's tutor. "How is it that my wife is disturbed? Get up, if you please." He got up. "Rudy, Rudy," Mrs. Mitwisser called out, as if her husband were far away, in a distant room, but he was right in front of her. "Dieser Mann," she called. "Hat so viele Fragen, 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 fragt und fragt." "Elsa," Mitwisser said, "you must quiet yourself." But she looked at the man who had kissed her wrists. Her wrists were still trembling. She saw into his mind. She knew of whose party he was. "He is Karait," she said. And Mitwisser laughed.